So welcome to the Identity Implementers Working Group call for April 8th. Thank you for joining us today. Let's see, I will let me stop so we can get that link. Works better when I'll post the link in the chat to the wiki page. And there we go. Feel free to sign in on the attendee list. All right, thank you for joining today. The Linux antitrust policy, we're a community of collaborators and we each have our day jobs as well. So basically what that says is anything that's proprietary or would otherwise be disclosed under NDA, please keep that out of the call. Otherwise, please contribute and collaborate with the discussion today. Let's see, is there anyone new that hasn't been on before that would like to introduce themselves? I think I recognize everyone. All right. As I mentioned, feel free to sign the attendee list. That lets us know who's joining the calls. We do have several that watch the recording that are in the APAC time zone. And so they can sign up after as well by going to the same link I've put in the chat. Announcements, big announcement coming up is week after next is the Internet Identity Workshop. That's going to be held online again, like it has been the last couple of times. I know they're hoping for an in-person meeting in the fall, and I think things are looking good, but we'll see how that goes. So feel free to follow that link and sign up. The best identity conference that I see. I like the format where everything is dynamic on the fly. There's no set agenda, but I always come away having learned a tremendous amount of new late breaking information. So go ahead and check that out. Then in June, the Hyperledger Global Forum is taking place. Does anyone know, is that virtual this time or is that in person?
It is virtual.
Okay. That's kind of what I was suspecting. It's right at where at least the US anyway, probably will be sitting pretty good in June. At least that's our hope. But then there's a lot of international travelers as well. All right. Any other announcements that I haven't mentioned yet? All right. Well, so let's get started on today's agenda. As usual, we will go over some reports and events happening in a variety of the identity industry working groups. And then for our presentation, Daniel Bockenheimer from Accenture is joining us today. Welcome, Daniel. Thank you for joining. And so he'll be talking about the Known Traveler Digital Identity, part of Accenture's collaboration with the World Economic Forum, and how that pertains to SSI and Hyperledger Indy and all the technologies we're working on. So I look forward to that as well. All right. Let's see, the main identity working group. Did anyone happen to attend that one this week?
Was there one this week?
I'm sorry, it wasn't this week. It would have been last week, looking at the date. So that one, I am going to follow the recording. I put the recording here in the wiki notes. Daryl O'Donnell presented his latest advances in digital wallets, and he had given a presentation back in 2019. that has become kind of the go-to presentation, and he gave a bunch of updates. So please check that one out as well. Let's see, did anyone attend the contributors call this week? All right, what's going on there is there is a very large push to do a couple of things. One is to Ubuntu 16, which is the operating system used by Indie Ledger Steward nodes, is, I don't know what they call it, being end of life or going out of maintenance support, but otherwise it's being superseded by Ubuntu 20.04. And so there's been a real big push recently to get everything ready, and it's getting close. And as part of that process, they're also redoing the CI/CD pipeline to move from Jenkins to GitHub Actions. And they're well underway. They're still looking for volunteers. So if that's an expertise you have, please feel free to join. And let's see. So that's all pretty close. Just waiting for that to be released. Does anyone happen to know? I saw a note in their proceedings. They had mentioned the Indie Contribution Campaign. Does anybody have any details on exactly what that is? Okay,
I attended some of their meetings, and essentially they're looking for more people to contribute to coding for Hyperledger Indie and related projects. So I don't have a lot of details on that, but I do know that they're actively seeking more developers to help with the effort.
Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, they're always looking for new developers. I know BCGov in particular, they put out financial bounties so developers can come and contribute a very specific needed piece and in return for payment on that. And so that's the call where those are usually announced, is in the contributors call. And so, yeah. That's about all I know about that. All right. Did anyone attend and want to give a report on the ARIES Working Group A call this week?
I can. The Robert Mitwicki presented on a trustworthy data mesh concept that they've been developing.
Okay. And
there's lots of questions left there, but but the recording is posted.
Yeah, I attended that as well. And my perception was that it looked interesting, but it was kind of high level. And so there are...
It was decidedly high level. Yeah.
Yeah. The recording's there though. And I know that like every other group we talk about on this call, they're looking for volunteers as well. So yeah, go ahead and check that out. That link that I've posted there, the 210407 ARIES A call, there is usually a recording posted on that as well. So I hadn't checked to see if that had been posted yet. Sam, would you mind giving an update on the B call?
Yes, we continue our process of finalizing ARIES Interop Profile version 2. And there's a chance that we'll actually complete that next Wednesday. And so we're narrowing down to the very final issues and getting things cleaned up. It has produced, you know, when you start sticking a microscope on stuff, you find stuff that needs to be fixed or corrected. There's been a lot of that. So it's been a very good effort. And I think we're actually getting there, which is really important. That was both a call yesterday and the recording's posted, and it will be next week as well.
Excellent. Yeah, this is a very exciting development. this. So if you want to be compatible with your agents' wallets protocols, this is how where you want to go to do it. Right now, do you know, Sam, if Stephen Curran has, he mentioned last week, I asked him about this. Right now, the AIP version 2, whatever we're calling it, is kind of looks like a series of PRs. Will there be an effort to kind of coalesce that into more of a cohesive document, or is that kind of...
No, so there is a PR that contains the cohesive document. All of the other PRs are related things that need to get finished before we ratify the AIP 2. So there will be a concise place to go look and see not just which RFCs, Aries RFCs are included, but the actual commits of each of those that make it a lot easier to pinpoint an exact version that we're going to be targeting for the interoperability profile. So that means that there will be one central place to do it. There already is as a PR, but that will be we'll have a fixed URL document that we can reference and circulate.
Okay, excellent. But as I talk to people about AIP, mainly I've been saying, hey, go to this page, there's a list of PRs. And I was asked if there was anything just a little more formal on that. So that will be great to have. Is that an existing PR in progress?
It is. It's actually been in progress for like months now.
Okay.
it's basically been we've had discussions and everything else. I'll grab the link here and drop it in chat. The PR is 579, and I'll grab that.
Oh, is that the one that I've got right here?
Yes. Yeah. You already got the link there. I should have looked. That is the main one. And if you actually view the file that's part of that, it'll render Markdown for you, and you'll be able to see the list of AIP included references. They're one of the main differences between AIP 1 and 2, in addition to updated stuff, of course, is that AIP 2 has core things, which are just considered AIP 2. There's also sub-targets, which fix particular RFCs of different types that are more or less optional, but are worthy of considering with what you want. One of the notable ones is one that moves towards an envelope format that is going to be more compatible with, it'll be an easier jump to go to DIDCOM V2 when that happens. It's not yet, but when it happens, it'll be easier. And it also enables interoperability with the Aries framework Go stuff as it relates to some of the work that SecureKey has been doing. So we're finally building part of that bridge there, and this will help with that effort.
Excellent. Yeah, interoperability is a great thing. There's a lot of different platforms out there as far as libraries and toolkits to implement this. And so making sure they're all interoperable is important. Thank you for that update. I don't have any updates on any of these particular agents, so I'm sure they're in progress. Let's see, has anyone attended the Aries Bifold user group that would like to give an update?
I also attended that yesterday. Sorry for speaking up so much. There's an effort there to consider the UX portion of that. That was planned and scheduled, but then some busyness on behalf of the Indicio team made that not quite happen. So that'll happen in a future meeting. The next one happens during IIW, so we'll likely not have it. And just because of the overlap there, and it will be the meeting after that. So it's every 2 weeks, so it'll be a month from yesterday, or 4 weeks from yesterday. That will be an ongoing topic of planning that. We also brought up and talked about import export formats as well, was part of the conversation.
Excellent, thank you. And I would like to point out that this is an important group to monitor. Even if you're not, like, Bifold is built primarily in React Native and then some TypeScript. React Native is not a language platform that we use on our particular projects, but I do try to pop into this group occasionally, because what you're seeing in this particular group is going from zero to wallet to agent interaction as a process. And so all the things that we've done in a variety of the Indy Aries DIF working groups over the last couple of years, you're seeing this play out really quick, kind of in real time. And so even if you're not going to be consuming React Native in your own projects, I think this is an important group to monitor. And so, you know, I've right here on this first line, as I was reviewing some of the meetings that I've attended or minutes from meetings that I didn't, this is kind of what they're doing. All the connections, credentials, you know, proofs, all this kind of stuff, even all the way to UI UX. And so as you build your respective applications, this is a really good model to check out, even if you might not be using their particular code base. So I like the way they're setting this up and wandering through it, the process. Let's see, framework goes in progress there. There have been any updates to the interoperability test tools?
There have been consistent tests there or updates. There's a bunch of work. In two meetings ago, Stephen gave a presentation that also ended up being part of the DIF interoperability working group call about what Aries is doing for that and how the test works, et cetera. One of the exciting advancements there is that they have a mechanical Turk driver for mobile apps. Mobile apps are often hard to script depending on the environment, but they have written someone has written, I don't know who it was, wrote a driver that tells the human what to actually do in order to complete the test. So it's obviously not something you're gonna involve as part of your build process, but it is something that you can step through to verify compatibility with mobile applications, even in a development environment. So that's really cool to see.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Anyone attend Hyperledger Ursa? Usually for this group, the answer is no. So they're proceeding with crypto development. Ursa is becoming part of the Hyperledger Indy, Indy node, all of that environment, and part of the SDK there. They're swapping out some of the older crypto, they're bringing in Ursa, and so that's an important group to follow. So if you're interested in cryptography, that's the place where it happens. Trust over IP, the all members meeting, the last one was on 17 March. We talked about that last time. A big part of that continues to be the Good Health Pass initiative. It's becoming a full Trust over IP project. That was also discussed on yesterday's steering committee meeting. I didn't see any notes on that, but where the Good Health Project is going is there's 9 drafting groups that are working on various elements of that. And 53 organizations have joined that effort, which is pretty important. Anybody have any comments on that would like to add more than I did?
It was a good summary, Steve. I use the words all consuming, and I'm juggling a drafting group meeting on another computer at the same time. And I was on the ID for Africa has a webinar series on vaccination credentials. Part one was today with ICAO and WHO and IATA and others. Part two is on the 29th. I'll give a plug for that. I'm presenting Tony Rose, Charlie Walton. All of us are part of Good Health Pass Collaborative and part of TOIP and part of CCI. The questions that are coming in of all shapes and ilks show that there's such a tremendous long way to go with all of this stuff. So,
Yeah, thank you for that. I know that, you know, all of this, a lot of these projects have been in progress for several years now. You know, your digital medical records, and, you know, they go by a variety of names. And then COVID obviously has accelerated this and kind of brought it all to the forefront. This is a good group to be involved in, the Good Health Pass effort. What's part of what's important about it is how this gets put together, because on the one hand, the main use case is get a COVID shot, or my doctor certifies that I survived and therefore can't transmit the disease. When I cross borders, I want to be able to assert a credential that testifies to that fact. But there's also a number of privacy and security concerns in this process. And so that's something that these groups are working on. And that's a really important, in addition to the main use case, it's very important to maintain privacy in there as well. Jim, I see your hands raised.
Yeah, I'm sorry. One more thing to mention, and Daniel had a great comment about interoperability. The exciting thing is that we're having very, very hard discussions, and hard discussions around architectures and frameworks and rules and interoperability, that speaking as a company that offers this credentialing service and a Hyperledger Indy Aries solution for customers, are things that have to be addressed sooner or later. So even if the vaccine passport concept falls apart due to societal and political pressures, the questions we're getting into about how to make a JSON LD credential work with paper and interact with JWT and an RDF canonicalization and stuff are substantive questions that I think will be beneficial for the industry as a whole. And I offer, you know, Daniel or anyone else to comment if I'm wrong, but.
No, definitely in line. Yeah, with certainly my thinking, but
Yeah, that's important. You mentioned interaction with paper records. That's part of it. Not everybody has a phone, or sometimes I went with a digital boarding pass on my phone a couple of years ago. And as soon as I get right up to the gate where you're supposed to scan it before you get on the plane, my phone crashes, just happenstance. And so I didn't have a paper. You know, those kinds of things happen. And so being able to interoperate with paper records is important. So I'm glad that's a focus. Let's see. So any updates? Go ahead.
I had something to add on one of the working groups for TOIP.
Okay.
If you're interested. I'm on the Utility Foundry working group, and the last meeting we had there, how familiar everybody is with it. I'll give a 2-second overview. Essentially, the Utility Foundry working group is helping anyone who would like to build a public identity utility. So right now we're kind of focused on a public indie network that we're helping people create. Most of the documentation is about that, but that's kind of the phase that we're at, is we're writing documents to help people. So I'm in charge of a subcommittee that's doing writing a getting started guide to walk people through the whole process from, you know, building your own company that can do this, right? What kind of company do you want to build, to creating the governance documents, to gathering all the people, and then finally the technical aspect of it, which is the part I know the best. And then so I'm writing that one, and then are helping write that, and then there's other people that are writing getting started guides there. And that work is progressing a little bit slowly, maybe, but it is progressing, and we're making progress in building some stuff that people can come and use to get their own public utility started up. Thanks.
Oh, that's excellent. If you have any links, in addition, I've put the Utility Foundry link on the page, but if you have any sublinks, especially to getting started documents, feel free to either add them to the wiki or drop them in the chat and I can do that. That's a, we've all been at this for a few years. And so we kind of know where all the main components are and how they fit together. But for people that are getting started in this area, it's a little daunting. And so getting started documents are great. I think they're very welcome. Thank you for doing that.
Okay, as we check that in and get it more finalized, we'll get the rough draft out and give you a link to that. Thanks.
Excellent, thank you.
Hi, Lynn.
Michael.
Just I've been sitting in and becoming more involved in the concepts and technology toy working group, and just I'll mention just kind of three things. People are talking kind of about bounties and looking for developers. So the concepts and technology working group is going to have a bounty to help create some tools for managing the TOIP glossary. So that'll be announced in the next few weeks, I guess. We've had lots of interesting discussions related to licensing, like Creative Commons licensing and then the Linux Foundation JDF licensing. If anybody has any questions about licensing, I've become an unwanted expert on that. And yeah, lots of seemingly simple concept like a glossary, lots of interesting things, discussions coming out of that group.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Which group was that? Do I have the link there?
The bottom one, concepts and technology.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Any updates from the DIDCOM working group?
We have been working on a concept of profiles for figuring out how to work with another party. This is a small problem now, but will become a large problem in the future as stuff expands. So that was a discussion last week and will be next week as well.
Excellent, thank you. And for those of you who haven't been to the DIFDIDCOM working group, that's another one of those very key areas in our industry. And that's part of what helps us keep all of our agents and wallets and everything interoperable. So please check that out. A lot of good things happening there. Let's see. Over at Sovereign, as we discussed up above, there's a lot of effort to get the next version of the Indie Ledger environment out. All those components are in progress. We kind of touched on those in the previous discussion of the working group, but I've put a summary right down here from the TGB call. The Stewards Council also met, and those same things are part of that. So the Stewards Council is more of it's more of the industry participation level. So each steward can send a representative to those meetings. In that meeting, I gave a presentation. It's really similar to the presentation I gave in this call 2 weeks ago, which is there's some automated methods for wrapping Rust code. So when you write Rust code, typically what we do is we use the foreign function interface as a way to bring that Rust generated library into your application, whether you're using Swift on iOS or Kotlin on Android or Python on a variety of platforms. And writing those wrappers has traditionally been largely done by hand, and it's very cumbersome. And so Mozilla's come out with a tool called Unify, and I've put a link there for that, as well as a link to my slide presentation for last week. What that tool does is if you build your Rust library and you build a public interface to that, then you can use what they call Unified Design Language. It's like IDL. To specify what that interface is. And then their tool generates the code necessary. It creates that wrapper layer for you that we've been largely creating by hand. And so that makes it quite a bit more maintainable and easier to consume to take a library written in Rust that we can port around all the different platforms. And then, to be able to automatically generate that wrapper layer. And so I've got some samples on how that's done. I've got a couple of other tutorials that I'm writing right now that I'm trying to get my company to post on the external GitHub repo so that you can all play around with those. But I think that's pretty exciting. And the benefit is it doesn't just kind of create the scaffolding layer, they call it, for the foreign function interface. It also makes the call layer look like the language that you're targeting. So in this case, I've written a Rust library and automatically generated a Swift wrapper. And so consuming that looks and feels like Swift, which is really good. And so the application programmers that want to import those libraries, it'll be much easier. And so that's something that I hope to follow up on more as I do more with it. But feel free. It's a tool by Mozilla. And so it's Apache old Mozilla license open source, free to use. So, all right. Well, thank you for all the updates on the working groups. And as I mentioned, Daniel Buckner is here to give us a presentation on the Known Traveler Digital Identity Program. Daniel, you ready to go?
Yeah. There's lots of Daniels in this space. This is Daniel Buckner. I know the Dan Buckner.
Oh. I was a little surprised there for a minute myself.
Oh, my apologies. I got your name correct at the beginning of the call and then messed it up here. Sorry about that. My bad.
Why are we talking Ion at a Hyperledger meeting?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to do the share screen. I'm going to share sound. So I check that off. And so this screen is that one. So I have this guy. I was just doing with sound because, kdti.org, yes. So Known Traveler Digital Identity. And there's this site, kdti.org, I could copy and paste it in the chat, but it's pretty straightforward. Lots of good content here. I do want, there's a 4-minute video. I think it's good, you know, that I know you can watch it on your own, but I think if we share it here, then we could get a discussion going based on that and based on what I'll present. And so I just want to give you the context, then we could do the video and then we could go into some of the high level technical bits. So to put it in context, I mean, just the name kind of gives some of it away. So there's digital identity and specifically decentralized digital identity. And the context is in cross-border travel. So so this pilot that is underway stymied by first COVID and then the decrease in international travel. And then the Good Health Pass initiative, a lot of focus has moved away from this cross-border travel pilot to let's get something out in terms of vaccine credentials, shying away from the term vaccine passport because politically it's bad. Anyhow, but the pilot, what we wanted to achieve is we wanted to operationalize some of the concepts that we documented in the initial paper, which is available on that website, which basically says decentralized identity and the underlying verifiable credentials and DIDs, and in this case, the use of blockchain for public keys, all sounds great, but how do we, can that really be used in this operational environment? And the main things that we wanted to achieve here is allowing these Dutch and Canadian citizens, those are the folks that would be in this pilot, be able to share trusted verifiable information at their under their control before they travel, so that so that's why it says in bold, obviating the need to present physical travel documents to prove identity. So by sharing these verifiable credentials, including biometrics, basically a photograph, ahead of time, they could do all the mandatory immigration checks, background checks, even facial watchlist checks if they wanted to. And then when I show up, because I shared all my information, they've done the checks at a certain point in time, at a certain point, you know, they could expect 1,000 people. So a face shows up, they do a 1-2,000 search. Oh, that face matches Dan. We've done all the checks. Okay, you know, no need to present anything else. We, you know, we've recorded your entry. Please proceed, sort of thing. Anyhow, that's what we're checking out here. The players, as Steve mentioned in the intro, it's World Economic Forum is the linchpin for this, because they do a lot of work with public-private organizations. The public side is the governments of Canada and Netherlands and their respective agencies. You know, in Canada, for example, there's Transport Canada, there's IRCC, there's CBSA, there's CATSA, all that have some level of involvement in this, and similar on the Dutch side. And then the airlines and the airports, Accenture, us, and VisionBox, we'll touch on that in a second, in this presentation. They're doing the touchless portion with kiosks and e-gates, basically. So before we get to decentralized identity, I just wanted to swap back to this one. So let's just show this. Like I said, it's under 4-minute video, and you should be able to hear the sound through this, I believe. That sound coming through?
With the number of international arrivals expected to grow 50% by 2030, travelers need seamless ways to cross borders.
Is there sound coming through, folks?
That also protect national security.
Yes. Okay, great.
Protecting their personal data. The Known Traveller Digital Identity, or KTDI, is a public-private collaboration that enhances security efforts while enabling a connected journey for today's international traveller. The KTDI is the only global travel initiative of its kind. Travellers can share documentation and information from one verified identity with partners including government authorities, airlines, and hotels. The KTDI allows travelers to play an active role in travel security efforts by sharing their information proactively. Travelers always retain control over what, when, and with whom they share their information. Each data element shared by the traveler is verified, accurate, and consistent every time. This is made possible by the technologies of distributed ledger, cryptography, and biometrics. As more data and information is added, travelers build more enriched profiles that build trust with each partner interaction. Let's follow one example of what the journey could look like for future travelers. After travelers download the KTDI app and create their profile, governments provide and authenticate the traveler's identity data based on their passport or government-issued digital ID. Biometrics will link the digital identity with the physical person and their national identity document. When approved, profiles are securely stored and encrypted in individual identity wallets. These contain the original government attestation and additional attestations as proof of the traveler's history of border crossings, plane trips, and hotel check-ins. When a traveler shares required identity information, the attributes they share are checked and validated through encrypted links to their source information. Whether the traveler is booking a flight, boarding a plane, or entering a destination country, the travel provider or government authority can be sure that the information shared is authentic and verified by the issuing organization. Travelers could also send their information to authorities in advance of departure, allowing travelers that are deemed low risk
to be screened sooner and processed faster. Hotels could offer self-service check-in via facial recognition to ensure travelers are who they say they are. Throughout the journey, the Known Traveler Digital Identity creates one connected process to build trust, encourage travel, and allow precious security resources to focus on the areas of greatest need. Components of the Known Traveler Digital Identity will be championed by the governments of Canada and the Netherlands. Additional partners include Air Canada, KLM Royal Dutch Airlines, Toronto Pearson International Airport, Montreal Trudeau International Airport, and Amsterdam Airport Schiphol, in collaboration with the World Economic Forum and Accenture. The Known Traveler Digital Identity will be piloted this year, unlocking the power to change how we travel.
Okay, so the intent was to do this year, but that didn't happen. And the intent was to have hotels involved, but that didn't happen either. I guess we don't have to go through all this, you know, the benefits of decentralized identity. I think this group understands all that already. I think the main difference is, as you saw a little bit already, that we're doing here is the verifiable credential includes a biometric that is used. And this is one of the things that, you know, when we talk about good health pass, and one of those nine, because we added a couple, one of the nine chapters or nine challenges, as we call them, in the Good Health Pass Collaborative is identity binding. How do you bind the vaccine credential to the presenter of that? And thus far, all the implementation, most of the implementations do not really factor in identity binding to any large extent. You know, HL7 says, I believe in patient ID, your first name, last name, date of birth, and document ID. And so presumably if you presented a passport, let's say when you got your vaccination, the person administering the vaccine could in theory, have written down your passport number. So that when you go to cross a border, they could look at the passport you're presenting and loosey-goosey kind of bind you to that. But in most of the cases, you're not presenting a passport when you get vaccinated, and you're not, and you're certainly not recording passport information anyhow. So the classic verifiable claims or verifiable credentials model, you know, we're going to use the trust triangle, you know, issuer, verifier, holder, in that we're going to do issuance and revocation. Yes, it's kind of clunky at this point, but you know, it is part of the pilot. We're going to do revocations. Yeah. So again, I don't think we need to go through the trust triangle too deeply for this. As you heard on the video, on the issuance, this is another nuance here. We know that in general, there's a lot of remote onboarding that happens, and people want to be able to sit on their couch and take a selfie, you know, scan their passport, take a selfie, match your live face with the face in the chip, and send that over to open a bank account, open up this, blah, blah, blah. But bottom line is, according to ICAO, commercial use of their public key directory to determine the authenticity of that passport is illegal. There's copyrights. You cannot do that without written consent, unless you're a border agency, is what ICAO says. So in this case, that's why we say the issuer of that, when you do that onboarding, the one-time onboarding, it's done by a government because they can access ICAO's PKD, they can access Interpol's stolen lost travel document repository, which it too is not available to the public, only border agencies, in order to establish that one time. And then that's why it's typically a government. But in this case, airlines can also issue boarding pass attestations or boarding or whatever they want. And governments will also issue entry-exit attestations, which ICAO wants to support in their logical data structure 2.0, but they there's all sorts of technical and political reasons why that's not happened yet. It's been in the works. So in the pilot, we will do entry-exit stamping as well. Anyhow, so yeah, based on the trust triangle, this, yeah, from trust over IP, and I know we have a newer version of this now, I was putting this here just as a reference and to just describe very briefly the, in KDTI, it was agreed by the stakeholders, the two anchor governments, that we're not using a public utility. This is a private permission indie-based network that it was just agreed that the governments, they wanted it behind the firewall just because it's a pilot. They wanted to minimize exposure to the world. So it's a private network that only those actors that you saw, the airports, airlines, and governments have access to it. We realize it will probably be, when in production, it will probably be a permissioned public network so that hotels and everybody in the travel ecosystem would be able to be verifiers, basically. If they wanted to issue, it still would be permission. This is the basic flow, just two slides, but as I said, and you saw in the video, you know, so what we have in the middle is blockchain. You know, so all the ecosystem providers, the first thing we're going to do is create the Genesis blocks and put all the public keys on the blockchain of those actors in the ecosystem. As you heard in the video, the airlines are going to invite Dutch and Canadian frequent flyers, because it's airlines in this pilot that are doing the invites. The travelers will download the app, they'll create their wallet, and only when the traveler visits an official in person, not remote, you can't get IAL3 remote unless it's monitored remote. And the intent here was to be at the very highest identity assurance levels. And for that reason, the IAL3, and for the reason of to get IAL3, you need the cryptographic means to determine the authenticity of the document presented in the identity proofing process, and that can only be done with access to the public key directory. Anyhow, and then what's written to the blockchain? Well, because we just are issuing a verifiable claim and we want to revoke or have the ability to revoke, we update the accumulator, but that's really all that's happening during issuance to the blockchain. As we all know, it's peer-to-peer between the issuer and the holder that those verifiable claims are getting in the wallet. Then each trip that the traveler goes on, now they could share, selectively disclose information from their wallet to the actors in their trip, a destination country. In the case of Netherlands, it would be also on debarkation. Canada doesn't have immigration control on exit. So if you're leaving Canada to go to Netherlands, you're only talking with one immigration entity. If you're going the other way, you have to talk to two immigration agencies, right? And share your information with them, with the airlines. For informed consent, you're consenting to certain information going to the airlines and certain information going to the debarkation country and embarkation company, So, and this is just showing blockchain interaction. So they're just checking, as you know, that the credential, to verify a verifiable credential, you're checking the authenticity, integrity, and revocation status. So that's all we're using the blockchain for. I'm showing this. This was actually from a presentation of OneID, but it's the same basic concept that IATA as OneID is. And again, even that's been slowed down because IATA's travel pass is taking precedence. But a similar situation where, just like we explained and you saw in the video, you create this digital identity credentials this one time. You're creating basically your passport details. And then each trip, the airline might be providing boarding pass information so that on each trip, I could share my passenger data set, as we're calling it. So it's the it's my core identity information that's required for each of these touch points. Like for bag drop, they don't need my passport number. They just probably need a face and first name, last name. And from my boarding pass, maybe boarding pass info. Whereas for border control, they're going to need my passport information. So and I selectively disclose to each of the parties per trip. All I'm showing here is, and this is where I said VisionBox comes in. So VisionBox is used in this case as the identity management service. So when each passenger says, yep, I'm coming to Schiphol Airport on this day at this time, that information is stored in the IDMS. And it's actually for Schiphol Airport, it's this configuration B, it's multilateral. They have an agreement. They'll disclose to the traveler that this information, where a data processor, but the data, what is it in GDPR, data processor, data, not owner, data controller is for certain information is the border agency, for certain information is the airline. So they're disclosing who the data controllers are, but they're processing it all in one IDMS. Otherwise, in some airports, it's probably going to be an airline IDMS. If you have like a G4 security or ICTS, they might have a separate, for security screening, a separate one, or TSA in the US, because we know TSA and CBP don't necessarily share a lot of information, and they do have two separate systems anyhow. But that's all this is showing. But once you share that passenger data set pre-travel, all these touch points are with face only, basically. Your face is your passport, as some say. So that's the KDTI concept, and that's certainly the OneID concept. And yes, you could have a health attestation along with that, but that, you know, requires infrastructure that the community doesn't seem to be willing to agree to at this point. Anyhow, so what did we do? Accenture provided a lot of services. So we created an interface control document with all the partners so that the partners, the governments and the airlines, that's what's in green. They have partner systems and interface components. But all we did was we're using the entire, indie stack. We will and Ursa, and we held off moving to Aries only because we have all these partners that would also have to be impacted. But we will do that soon, because we basically wrapped all the abstracted all those components. And we created these services based on the interface control document that we all agreed to, so that the partners in their kiosks or in their border control systems, they just need to invoke those services that we wrap. But it's all indie based on that private permission network, and we created the mobile app for this, only because the and it's a separate app. We for the pilot, we understand that in production, it could be any, hopefully anybody's wallet, with under riding underneath the airline's app. The airline, you don't want travelers to have multiple apps. So we created an app for the pilot that would have to be used separate from the airline's app. That was a known, constraint, let's say, for this. The other constraints are, we also have in that mobile app, like the landing card that's required for Canada and some other very specific things that would normally be done in the airline app. But that's a very high level. Oh yeah, so then this is just a depiction of, this was one we created, what's on the blockchain, because when people were really afraid, certainly a year ago or 2-3 years ago when we started talking about this, how are we going to support GDPR if there's information on the blockchain and, you know, and people wanted to exercise their right to be forgotten? Oh my God, how's that going to, no. This is what's on the blockchain. And that folks on this call understand that all the PIIs depicted here are in the possession and control of the individuals. What they share is under GDPR to these different agencies, but none of it's on the blockchain. And I think, yeah, so I don't know, certainly happy to answer any questions, but kdti.org is a good drill down point. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Daniel. That was an excellent presentation. Great overview. I hadn't seen that before. Any questions for Daniel?
Okay. One question that typically comes up is what's the status of it and when will it go live and everything? It's definitely been delayed because of the pandemic. As you can imagine, a lot of the airport resources have been reduced. And as things started to get stabilized, those same resources and government as well have now been shifted to how do we deal with health passes, let's say. So we don't know exactly when we're going to go live again, because we thought after it was looking like the vaccinations are out that there's going to be a return to travel. And we see, at least in the U.S., TSAs are hitting, TSA is reporting record travel, that it's going to come back. But as I was just saying, resources been really been focusing on good health pass. And like I said, even IATA is one ID, which is shares this concept, is stalled out. And I guess, we're right at the top of the hour now.
Yeah, I've got a quick technical question. That I put in the chat. The verified credentials themselves, I've forgotten what you guys call them, the known traveler digital identities, do those credentials themselves have a DID or not? It's a detail.
Yeah. So yes, the private DID. So what we wanted to do is, collaborating we have our developers in Bratislava, and collaborating with other industry experts. So in order to establish that pairwise pseudonymous channel, yes, the each wallet agent has a private DID that's in the same DID that's shared is not used more than once, right? So I think that's what you're talking about. So yes.
I'm asking about the actual credential itself, the traveler digital identity credential.
Okay. Is there a DID within that credential?
A uniquely identifying DID for that credential.
Oh, interesting. I don't think so, but I'm not 100% sure. I could research that and get back to you, but I don't think so. I'm trying to remember the data schema, all the elements that were agreed on by all the stakeholders. And I don't think that was one. There's a connection ID was the closest that I could think of, but
it's not the same.
Yeah.
Okay. I sent you a LinkedIn request. We can connect after.
Okay, sure. Great. Okay.
All right. Yeah, I think the core of that question is generally what goes on the blockchain, what's a public disclosure kind of thing. And I think you answered that earlier in the presentation, saying the only DID that got written to the blockchain was the issuer DID, their public DID.
That's correct. But I think the question that's standing here is it part of the verifiable credential? Do we put a DID within that verifiable credential? Like, is there a unique identifier in that VC?
Separate from the subject itself, yeah.
Right. So I'm not 100% sure. I kind of don't think so, but yeah, we could take that offline. I'm happy to share with anybody, but I just don't know, and I'll have to look at that schema again.
Well, we had one last question from the chat. Did you use Indie SDK to build?
Oh yeah, we definitely use the Indie SDK 100%. But when we gave the package to our partners, that those partner components, we basically wrapped it and we created, you know, so we wrapped it to the point where we gave them like Docker containers so they could just, we try to make it as easy for them as possible. But yes, we definitely use the Indie SDK.
Excellent. Thank you very much. What a wonderful presentation. So we'd all like to thank Daniel Bockenheimer for joining us today and giving us an overview of the Known Traveler initiative. We look forward to that. I do, for when I travel. That would be a easier way to do things. So I look forward to that. That's our call today. We're right at the top of the hour and just passed a little bit. I would like to point out that we meet every 2 weeks. 2 weeks from now is the last day of IIW, so we don't want to try to compete with IIW. So I'll cancel that meeting and then we'll meet 2 weeks following. And I'm trying to get James Ebert from Indicio to come talk to us about the Hyperledger Aries Bifold project. So hope that all comes together and watch for some announcements in the regular channels. And thank you everyone for attending today and especially Daniel for presenting. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.